Dedicated to the survival of American democracy in an increasingly dangerous world, this is Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, acted as Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy under President Ronald Reagan, founder and president of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., the go-to man for defense and foreign policy issues, joined by the greatest minds in the security policy business, the special forces in the war of ideas, at Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. This is Frank Gaffney, your host and guide for an intelligence briefing on what I think of as the war for the free world. A man I've regarded for many years as a champion in that war is, I'm pleased to say, our first guest. He is former Congressman and Lieutenant Colonel Alan West. Alan served with distinction in the 112th Congress. He served in the United States Army for 22 years, including receiving numerous decorations for his service in combat and elsewhere. And it is a great privilege to have him with us to talk about a couple of rather important issues that he's addressing at his website, which is alanwest.com. Alan, welcome back. It's good to have you with us.
It's good to be with you, Frank. It's been too long, so we need to get back to doing this regularly.
We've got to. I'll take you up on it. Thank you so much. Listen, you've been writing, and I need to correct it. It's alanbwest.com, I believe, is the web address where you can find Alan's important posts. You have talked about, among other things, an accommodation, which I find, obviously you do as well, very worrying, on the part of the Obama administration to assorted Islamists. Talk a little bit about how that's manifesting itself and what it means in this war for the free world.
Well, I think a lot of people, Frank, have not paid attention to a lot of the trends coming from Barack Obama. When he first got into office, his first call was to Mahmoud Abbas. His first interview was to Al Arabiya. We remember his trips to the speech he gave before the Turkish General Assembly, and then the speech that he gave in Cairo when he had the Muslim Brotherhood sitting front and center there in 2009 at the Cairo University at his insistence. And when you understand that there are Muslim Brotherhood-affiliated individuals in his cabinet, and definitely not in his cabinet, but in his administration, and the access that they have to the White House, then you look at his policies. How he was so supportive of Mohamed Morsi, the Muslim Brotherhood-controlled government in Egypt, sending them F-16s, M1 tanks, but then when Morsi is kicked out of power, he is being very reticent and not being accommodating to the new Egyptian government under General al-Sisi. You look at his going into Libya, basically support Islamists there, violating the War Powers Act, not getting approval from Congress. He propped up groups like Ansar al-Sharia, who then in turn came back and were responsible for the attack against the special mission compound there in Benghazi, killing an ambassador and three other America, Sean Smith, Kyle Woods, Glenn Doherty. And now we find out that we have just 2 weeks ago evacuated the embassy there in Libya because Ansar al-Sharia has declared that eastern Libya, Benghazi being the center point, is now an Islamic caliphate. But yet here's a president that does not want to go in and fight against ISIS, which all you have to do is listen to what they say and see what they're doing. How can you not build a winning coalition? How can you not want to take action to stop a group such as ISIS? Sitting down with Qatar and Turkey and trying to have negotiations for Hamas, which Hamas is a terrorist organization, we have to understand Qatar and Turkey are two of the largest financiers for Islamic terrorism, as well as what you've seen happen with Iran and the negotiations that have broken down with stopping their nuclear program. So all of those things point to one thing. The president seems to have an Islamist perspective and viewpoint.
I couldn't agree more. Alan, let me turn to one sort of other element of this, and that is the role played in the first term of this administration in so many of those policies, articulating them and advancing them by Hillary Clinton. She's making it sound as though it never happened on her watch. Certainly, she didn't have anything to do with it. She's very concerned about the global jihad. And yet, one of the people who I believe you've just described, very closely tied to the Muslim Brotherhood over many years, Huma Abedin, was her deputy chief of staff and I think a prime contributor to the work that Hillary Clinton personally did on something called the Istanbul Process, which was all about restricting our freedom of speech lest we give offense to Muslims. So talk a little bit about the Hillary Clinton element in all of this. Is there a dime's worth of difference between her and Barack Obama, as far as you can tell?
Well, you know, I guess after they had their little, you know, hug last night up in Martha's Vineyard, there probably isn't. But no, I don't think that there's a big difference. Let's go back and look at how Bill Clinton and Hillary Clinton, you know, firmly embraced Yasser Arafat, who was the original Palestinian terrorist with Fatah and the Palestinian Liberation Organization. And I'm very concerned about some of the things that we saw happen in that first term that, you know, Hillary Clinton was the Secretary of State, and she said nothing about UN Resolution 1618, which is going to start castigating, you know, any quote-unquote speech deemed offensive against Islam as, you know, punishable and criminal. And that's something that the Organization for Islamic States are pushing. And you never heard Hillary Clinton speak out against that.
To the contrary, she was a champion of it in the Obama administration. Let me turn quickly to another topic with you. You've got so much on your website that I want to call attention to, Congressman Alan West. The Russians are engaged in a pattern of behavior that can only be described as reminiscent of the Cold War and certainly aggressive. What are they doing with these bomber runs in close proximity to U.S. airspace?
Well, it's twofold. First of all, I think it's a probing attack. See how far they can push you and see what they can get away with. We've seen an uptick in that here in the last 2 to 3 weeks. But I think more so importantly, it's an information operation. It's a propaganda, psychological warfare type of exploit. Because what Vladimir Putin is showing is that your sanctions aren't bothering me. And he's showing that not just only to the United States and to the international community, he's showing that to the Russian people, that I am defiant, that I am belligerent, and that I am not backing down from standing up to the United States of America. And this is the derivative, and this is the result of what happens when you lean over in an off-mic moment and you tell then Russian President Dmitry Medvedev that I'll have more flexibility after my reelection. This is what you end up getting.
Congressman Alan West, let me turn to one final topic with you, drawing upon your experience and distinguished record in the United States Army. Recently, the U.S. Army Command in Europe announced that I think for the first time in the history of the American military, it was placing in a very senior position a brigadier general from the German military as its chief of staff. What are the implications of it in terms of, you know, the chain of command?
You know, Frank, I believe that if you were to have a foreign national general in like a school post position, like a staff college, war college, something like that, you know, training doctrine command where you have an exchange. But when you have it in one of your more of a combatant command type of unit, that's where we have some problems. So it's going to be very interesting to see how that whole command relationship really does work. You know, you've seen some of these task-organized relationships when you go into combat zones where you have coalition command and control of that nature. But, you know, to have it in a you know, regular T-O-N-E organization, table of organization equipment, where you have the chief of staff coming from a foreign country, you know, it's going to be some challenges there. You know, I'm of the mindset, Frank, that I believe that as we look at, you know, changing, you know, how we are doing business in our military, we need to have less of a forward deployed military, more of a power projection type of military. And I think that we need to look at all of these big, you know, unwieldy headquarters that we have all over the globe and see where we can scale that back and we can reallocate those resources really to having a military that is out there ready to respond, you know, at a moment's notice in an instance like what we had in Benghazi or what we see going on with ISIS.
Well, I'm with you on the need for more power projection, and unfortunately the trend is in exactly the opposite direction, Ellen West, as you know. I must say that where we have forward deployed forces from which to project power, I think that probably is something we better try to retain, maybe with fewer headquarter personnel, but I have to say I just can't for the life of me figure out why we would put a foreign national in our chain of command, and in ways that I think would almost certainly have an impact on unit cohesion and morale and maybe even security. But all of this is a subject for another discussion on another day. I'm afraid we are hard out of time. Please come back to us again soon. Next up, another distinguished former member of the United States House of Representatives, Congressman Pete Hoekstra, joins us. We'll take his stock on what's happening in the Middle East at the moment. Straight ahead.
Visit us at facebook.com/securefreedom with Frank Gaffney.
An inspector general serves as an independent watchdog in each federal agency, promoting integrity and efficiency while rooting out fraud, waste, and abuse of authority in our government. Several important U.S. agencies have not had an IG for years, including the State Department, which has been without an IG for 5 years. During a constant wave of scandals in Washington, D.C., the newly published IG handbook by yours truly, Joseph E. Schmitz, couldn't be more timely. Every IG takes an oath to support and defend the Constitution against all enemies, foreign and domestic. By exposing fraud, waste, or abuse through audits, IGs satisfy the constitutional mandate that a regular statement and account of the receipts and expenditures of all public money shall be published from time to time. The new IG handbook explains by what authority and for what purpose an inspector general does what he or she does on behalf of we, the people. Find the Inspector General Handbook on Amazon.com.
Are you looking to hire an IT specialist, or a logistics expert, a medical technician, or a security professional? Well, there are some very qualified candidates out there. America's wounded warriors. These men and women returning from battle are eager to get back to life at home and a good job. Some have wounds you can see, and some have wounds you can't see, like post-traumatic stress disorder. For these accomplished professionals, Wounded Warrior Project has developed the Warriors to Work program, a career counseling service that helps wounded warriors translate their military experience to the civilian workplace. These warriors have world-class job skills and a unique perspective on teamwork. And to ensure proper placement for each individual, Wounded Warrior Project works with employers to find just the right candidate for the job. When your company is looking to hire talented, highly trained employees, contact Wounded Warrior Project at findwwp.org. Welcome home the brave.
Hi, this is Frank Gaffney. My day job is running the Center for Security Policy, which each weeknight brings you this program. But Secure Freedom Radio is just one of the important contributions the Center makes to the common defense. We call our team the Special Forces in the War of Ideas. Like the real special forces, we strive to be agile, creative, and highly effective in identifying threats to our country and how they might best be countered. We can't do all this without you, though. Also, like the real special forces, ours need ammunition. And in the war of ideas, ammo is money. The Center is a nonprofit, tax-exempt organization. Contributions to its work are tax-deductible and an important investment in your security and freedom. Find out more about the Center for Security Policy and how you can help keep its Special Forces team in the fight by visiting securefreedom.org. Many thanks.
Ready to roll?
Go for it.
Hi, I'm Jessie Jane Duff. I'm a retired United States Marine Corps Gunnery Sergeant, and I served 20 years on active duty serving this great country. I'm with Concerned Veterans for America now. After I got off active duty, I realized I still wanted to be involved and help change the direction our country is going. Concerned Veterans for America offered me that great opportunity. If you want to get involved, and you're thinking of getting involved, please visit our website because we have many activities throughout the nation. We have wonderful representatives in each state who are putting forward different ways you can become engaged. So go to the website at concernedveteransforamerica.org, and you do not have to be a veteran. But if you support the freedoms that we all fought so hard for to defend this great nation, then consider participating in the many activities we are participating in and helping to change the direction our country is going.
You're listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
We're back, joined by another distinguished member of the United States House of Representatives Alumni Association. He is the former chairman of the House Intelligence Committee, Congressman Pete Hoekstra of Michigan. Today he is a Shulman Senior Fellow with the highly regarded and very much appreciated Investigative Project on Terrorism. He also is a senior director in the Greenberg and Traurig practice here in Washington, D.C. Congressman, welcome back. It's always good to have you with us, sir.
Hey, thanks, Frank. Yes, it is always good to be with you.
Well, we've talked about this in the past. There have been some developments since that previous conversation. Give me your sense of what the current state of affairs is with respect to the revelations that the CIA did indeed spy on members of the United States Senate staff in your counterpart Intelligence Committee investigating the agency.
Well, a couple of things have happened. The CIA has put in place an internal accountability board review. So they will review the actions of employees within the CIA, and if appropriate, they will determine what type of punishments may have to be meted out against these employees. The Senate and the public display of hostility between the Senate Intelligence Committee and the CIA, that's kind of faded into the background. I'm sure there's still a lot of tension in the background, but the public disagreements appear to have toned down. Now, let me say something. The Internal Accountability Review Board, this is going to take forever. There was one that was put in place that I'm very familiar with, and that was the shoot down of the missionary plane in Peru. I think it took almost 9 years before there were actually any steps taken. And yeah, it's kind of like, now, you know, two people were killed. You know, the program was a disaster, and it took 9 years to hold anybody accountable.
So it kind of puts things on ice and, if not actually buries them. We're speaking with the former chairman of the House Permanent Select Committee on Intelligence, Congressman Pete Hoekstra. Congressman, you were talking a little bit about effort, it would appear to be, to Deep Six, the current controversy on CIA spying. But what I want to address with you is the very, very dubious judgment when it comes to matters of Islamism, evident in the CIA's director, John Brennan. And specifically, he, I think now notoriously declared at one point that it was, quote, absurd, unquote, to believe that a caliphate was in prospect as a result of the machinations of various Islamist entities. Doesn't look like such a keen insight today. What do you make of John Brennan, his judgment and his conduct in this area, in particular things like purging of files of training materials that might offend Muslims?
Well, Frank, this is a huge problem. This has been almost the issue with the Obama administration from day one. They've discounted the threat from radical Islam, you know, making sure we don't use certain words and certain terminology. And what we've seen now in the last 6 weeks, once again, this is a very, very dangerous and deadly enemy. You know, Brennan said, you know, and he's now hanging on the words of global dominance. It's not about global dominance. No, you know, when has there ever been global dominance by any single ideology? That just doesn't occur. But, you know, Brennan, by his comments, was dismissing anybody that said radical Islam, jihadism, the establishment of the caliphate. You know, you guys are crazy. And then the president, 3 months ago, called ISIS. They said, this is the JV team. Excuse me, the JV team just is now controlling parts of Syria. It is controlling a large part of Iraq. It has gone from the Islamic State in Syria to the Islamic State into the Levant to now calling itself the Islamic State. It is now a caliphate. And by many definitions, you could call this a nation state. It has leadership. It controls territory. It has an army. It controls infrastructure. And it's delivering services to the people under its control. And this administration, whether it is the director of the CIA, whether it is the president, they've discounted the threat. The real question here, Frank, is are they mouthing what they want to believe, or are they mouthing what they believe their intelligence is telling them? If this is what's coming out of our intelligence community that says this war is over, we've defeated them, we've got serious problems in our intelligence community.
Well, at the very least, it raises the question, Congressman Hoekstra, which I know you wrestled with for a long time in your oversight role on the Hill, of politicization of the intelligence community. You know, when you have the guy who is now the CIA director saying, quote, "I'm not talking about Al-Qaeda's grandiose vision of global domination through a violent Islamic caliphate. That vision is absurd, and we are not going to organize our counterterrorism policies against a feckless delusion that is never going to happen," unquote. That, if that's the kind of mindset that the guy who is in charge of our intelligence collection and analysis, at least at the CIA, is saying, it really suggests you're not likely to get good output from that agency at the very least.
That's exactly right, because take a look at, we have this Islamic State in existence, at least temporarily, in the Middle East, in Syria, in Iraq. Then you take a look at what's going on in Africa, the total instability in Libya, the continued Muslim terrorist attacks, whether it's in Kenya or Nigeria. And those, so there you have, in two different places, you've got significant radical Islamist presence, and they're acting, this administration and hopefully the intelligence community is coming to the realization that this threat is much greater and much bigger and much more enduring than what the leadership of this administration has been saying for the last 2 or 3 years.
Yeah, well, and in our previous segment, former Congressman Alan West made the point that Ansar al-Sharia in Libya, as you say, it's in distress there at the moment. Ansar al-Sharia has also declared a caliphate. So we may actually have competitors for this delusion, as they say.
We shouldn't view this as competitors. The bottom line is there's not much difference between all these terrorist organizations. They are much more alike than they are different. They're much more likely to unify than they are to split and fragment. It is, it is a global threat. The global threat is real. They just have different names in different places, but their ideology brings them together.
That's the key point. It is a common shared ideology, even across the Sunni-Shia divide, that believes that it is it is God's will that they will impose this on all of us. Congressman, let me just finish by saying one other element of what seems to be the recklessness of this administration when it comes to the Islamists is a development announced recently that we're going to allow Libyan pilots and would-be nuclear engineers once again to study in this country. I must tell you, Congressman, I can't figure out how they're even going to have their visas processed since it's too dangerous in Libya at the moment for us to have an embassy there. What on earth is this administration thinking, and what might be the implications, very quickly, of bringing such people into our country?
Well, we'll have no opportunity to do effective background checks on who we are letting in. And you're right, they're coming from a state, it's very hard to call Libya a nation state at this point. They don't have a functioning government. They don't control all of the territory that is within their borders. I'd be very, very nervous, and it's a bad idea to be letting those folks in because who knows what they're going to be doing with this training moving forward.
Congressman Pete Hoekstra, we miss you on Capitol Hill, but we're always glad to have you with us here at Secure Freedom Radio. I hope you'll come back to us. Have a great rest of the summer, and we'll be talking with you in the near future. Next up, we'll be talking with Paula DeSutter, former Assistant Secretary of State, about the Obama administration's, malfeasance when it comes to nuclear arms control and policy. Straight ahead.
Visit us at facebook.com/securefreedom. With Frank Gaffney.
Hugh Hewitt keeps the Constitution first.
That's what the left is about right now. Not about this or that.
Regulation or restriction.
Not about keeping weapons out of the hands of the mentally disabled. It's about attacking the Constitution. And by the way, you cannot mess with the Second Amendment without messing with the First and the Fourth and the Fifth and the Tenth. You either respect the Constitution or you don't.
The Hugh Hewitt Show, weeknights at 6, after Michael Medved at 3, on 1260 WRC, New Choice, Intelligent Talk.
This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Earlier this week, former Vice President Dick Cheney observed that relations between the United States and Israel, its most important Mideast ally, have never been worse. Yesterday, the Wall Street Journal showed how bad they've become. It seems President Obama is no longer simply deeply hostile toward the elected leader of Israel, Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. The White House and State Department have just instituted procedures that have the effect of slowing and, in at least one case, preventing U.S. replenishing of Israeli stocks of weapons critical to our allies' self-defense. Such interference belies Team Obama's professed commitment to the right of Israel to defend itself. Worse yet, this evidence of America's unreliability as an ally can only encourage the Jewish state's enemies and ours to redouble their efforts to destroy her. This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Learn more at securefreedom.org.
I was diagnosed with PTSD. I got out and was sort of on my own.
Since 2003, more than 103,000 service members have been diagnosed with PTSD. Hope for the Warriors focuses not on what happened, but what happens next. Don't let them be forgotten. You can help restore hope to our military families.
My wife and my son are affected by combat, too.
Visit hopeforthewarriors.org today.
People know that they can turn to them and trust them.
The Devil We Don't Know by Noni Darwish uncovers the dark side of revolution in the Middle East and the reason why Muslim countries are unable to dig themselves out of a cycle of revolution, political unrest, and tyranny. The constitutions of many Muslim countries state that Sharia law supersedes all other law, and that is why it has failed in providing a legal and political system where healthy democracy can flourish. In this dynamic, only tyrannical governments can survive. In The Devil We Don't Know, human rights activist and Center for Security Policy fellow Noni Darwish answers the tough questions. Why the Arab Spring won't usher in freedom and democracy or a feminist movement. And how Israel will be threatened by the new wave of Islamism after the so-called Arab Spring. The Devil We Don't Know by Noni Darwish. It's available at Amazon.com.
Every day, the men and women of the United States Marine Corps demonstrate their commitment to defend the American way of life. Since 1775, wherever the mission takes us, we always remember the land we call home. As Marines, we take a stand for our nation, for us all. The few, the proud, the Marines.
Hi, this is Frank Affney. You're listening to Intelligent Talk on WRC 1260 in Washington, D.C.
Now more with Frank Affney.
We're back. Joined, I'm very pleased to say, by a friend and colleague of many years, a woman I've come to admire tremendously, both for her clarity of vision and for her distinguished public service, including most recently as the Assistant Secretary of State with responsibility for verification, compliance, and implementation. She also served as a professional staff member of the U.S. Senate Select Committee on Intelligence. She is the Honorable, and I mean that in every sense of the word, Paula DeSutter. Paula, welcome back. It's good to have you with us.
Thank you, Frank. Always good to talk to you.
You have spent so much time, Paula, and have such extraordinary corporate memory about matters involving arms control and the effort to monitor and hold accountable, first the Soviets and now the Russians, with respect to their serial violations of various obligations under successive treaties, that I'm sure you were not surprised at the latest to be acknowledged by our government, namely the violations of the Intermediate Range Nuclear Forces Treaty, or INF Treaty. Talk a little bit about, first of all, the nature of those violations.
Well, And part of the time I spent working on this was under your tutelage during the Reagan administration. But I was a little surprised about it because it's rather bold. There are two questions of concern. One, the administration has now reported to be a violation of the treaty, which it's about time, but that has to do with a cruise missile that falls within the range of the INF treaty. All of the INF treaty declared systems were to have been eliminated by 10, 15 years ago, and the verification or inspection provisions ended, but we still have the right to monitor by NTM. According to the Russian press, the Russians have been testing this cruise missile, the R-500, since 2007. And so this has clearly been a violation of the treaty. And we now know that the Obama administration has known about the violation since at least September 2010, because one of the people who would have been in a position to know testified during a confirmation hearing in February that they knew about the issue and had the intelligence community brief some staff and members on the eve of the vote in the Foreign Relations Committee on the New START treaty. But members couldn't talk about it publicly. It was all held at a very high level of classification, despite the fact that even back then there had been Russian press reports. So in the interim, someone that you've had on as a guest, Dr. Mark Schneider, has been absolutely at the forefront of writing about this within the U.S. He's absolutely, totally knowledgeable about Soviet and now Russian programs and has been the beacon caller on this.
Together with you, you know, we've had plenty of reason to believe that this was going on. And you were about to say, I think that there's another violation that has not yet been confirmed by the Obama administration. But rather than get into that ballistic missile program, which simply compounds the problem that they already have acknowledged, Paula DeSoto, I want to talk with you quickly about what does it mean in the first instance that the Russians are engaged in such brazen or bold, as you say, violations of this treaty? And what does it tell us about the Obama administration that it has been so derelict in disclosing this information to the American people? I mean, it really is scandalous when you think about it that they knew about a violation of one treaty at the very time that they were trying to sell the other, but they withheld this information from the public. I'm appalled.
Well, I'm saddened. I mean, for a long time we thought that the INF treaty was something that we could put in our rearview mirror. We didn't have to focus on it or worry about it too much. And yet, ever since Putin has come to the fore in Russia, it's been clear to most of us who've been watching that it's time to expect the old Soviet approach to things like arms control to take the lead. I agree that what the Russians are doing is rotten, but that isn't what concerns me the most. The U.S. can come up with a way to handle this cruise missile if we decide to do so. It's that if you compare this to what President Reagan did, President Reagan never covered up violations. President Reagan raised compliance concerns at each and every one of his bilateral meetings with his counterparts. He took it serious. We put constant, steady pressure and public pressure on the Soviet Union to try to bring them back into compliance. And not only has this administration not done that, but under the lead of my successor in my job, Rose Gottmuller, this administration has pushed hard for further bold reductions beyond what we've already done in our strategic forces, and more disturbingly, in NATO forces. They had a meeting in Chicago where they pushed NATO hard to further reduce their forces. Gottmuller has been over to Russia and to Europe pushing for further reductions. At the same time, the NATO allies learned about this violation for the first time, according to press reports, that are reliable, in January of this year. Gottmuller didn't even raise this with the Russians until last year.
It's astonishing. And Paula, I appreciate that there may be some sensitivity talking about your successor in initially the position of Assistant Secretary of State for Verification and so on. Now the Undersecretary of State in this portfolio. But the bottom line is Rose Gottmuller's judgment on these matters, and for that matter, the judgment of President Obama himself, with respect to this determination to pursue the diminishing importance of nuclear forces in our national security posture, and to profess that there is a snowball's chance in hell of ridding the world of these things, even if we lead from behind, to say nothing of lead from in front, is absolutely irresponsible, it seems to me.
In my mind, when I force myself to try to look at their foreign policy behavior, because I hate doing it because it's a car wreck in slow motion, just in a do loop over and over. But the term that comes to mind is slovenly. And there are always two possibilities with the Obama administration. Is it incompetence or is it, you know, conspiracy? And I still don't know which one it is after all these years, because it's hard to imagine this degree of incompetence. And what appears to be the case is that they simply do not care about U.S. national security or the security of our allies. You know, you can agree or disagree that with Obama on a lot of things. He was elected president, and that entails taking care, being responsible for making sure that America is safe now and in the future, and that simply is not the case. And even if Obama was simply not smart about foreign policy matters, you would think that he would surround himself with people, if he's not going to care about it or spend time, that he would entrust people who are credible and serious to take care of those matters. And that's simply not what's happened.
Paula DeSoto, I'm afraid that has to be the last word for the moment, but I hope it will be the beginning of a very much more sustained conversation with you about it. I personally am of the view that this is not incompetence. This is a wrecking operation. And the president and his senior subordinates, like Rose Gottmuller, are hard at it. And what appalls me most is, candidly, that the American people are generally ignorant of what they're doing, much as we've seen their efforts to conceal information about what the Russians are up to and the strategic implications of that. They're not being very transparent about what they're doing to dismantle our nuclear deterrent. Thank you, Paula, for your great service to our country. I look forward to talking with you again very soon. We'll be speaking with Yossi Hollander next about energy security and what we can do to strengthen it.
Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
An inspector general serves as an independent watchdog in each federal agency, promoting integrity and efficiency while rooting out fraud, waste, and abuse of authority in our government. Several important U.S. agencies have not had an IG for years, including the State Department, which has been without an IG for 5 years. During a constant wave of scandals in Washington, D.C., the newly published IG handbook by yours truly, Joseph E. Schmitz, couldn't be more timely. Every IG takes an oath to support and defend the Constitution against all enemies, foreign and domestic. By exposing fraud, waste, or abuse through audits, IGs satisfy the constitutional mandate that a regular statement and account of the receipts and expenditures of all public money shall be published from time to time. The new IG handbook explains by what authority and for what purpose an inspector general does what he or she does on behalf of we, the people. Find the Inspector General Handbook on Amazon.com.
I was diagnosed with PTSD. I got out and was sort of on my own.
Since 2003, more than 103,000 service members have been diagnosed with PTSD. Hope for the Warriors focuses not on what happened, but what happens next. Don't let them be forgotten. You can help restore hope to our military families.
My wife and my son are affected by combat, too.
Visit hopeforthewarriors.org today.
People know that they can turn to them and trust them.
Hi, this is Frank Gaffney. My day job is running the Center for Security Policy, which each weeknight brings you this program. But Secure Freedom Radio is just one of the important contributions the Center makes to the common defense. We call our team the Special Forces in the War of Ideas. Like the real Special Forces, we strive to be agile, creative, and highly effective in identifying threats to our country and how they might best be countered. We can't do all this without you, though. Also, like the real Special Forces, ours need ammunition. And in the War of Ideas, ammo is money. The Center is a nonprofit, tax-exempt organization. Contributions to its work are tax-deductible and an important investment in your security and freedom. Find out more about the Center for Security Policy and how you can help keep its Special Forces team in the fight by visiting securefreedom.org. Many thanks.
I lost my arm.
I lost my legs.
But you can't see what I lost. Over 625,000 vets are suffering from traumatic brain injury
and post-traumatic stress. They're the wounds you can't see.
But with your help, we can expose the invisible wounds of war.
And get these veterans the help they desperately need.
100% of your donation goes toward building treatment centers. Help heal the invisible wounds of war. Donate at makeitvisible.org.
I had no choice the news that was given to me on August 2nd.
Gold Star mom, Debbie Lee.
But I did have a choice how I responded.
In August 2006, Mark Allen Lee became the first Navy SEAL to lose his life in Iraq.
I chose to put on Mark's boots, pick up his weapon, and stay in the fight for our troops and their families.
And America's Mighty Warriors was born.
Mark's name meant Mighty Warrior. And he definitely lived up to his name.
At AmericasMightyWarriors.org, you'll find Mark's last letter home.
Read it, and you'll know what AMW's about.
It's about service to active duty members of the military and their families.
Including care packages, visits, and more.
It's about supporting the wounded and the people who love them.
It's about the Gold Star family.
Special retreats, concerts, Mother's and Father's Day events to let them know they're loved and not forgotten. Donations are tax deductible and go directly where they're needed.
Read Mark's last letter home.
And just as he inspired his mom, let Mark inspire you to some random acts of kindness of your own.
At AmericasMightyWarriors.org.
This is Jenny Thomas. I do video interviews of leaders with the Daily Caller. I had the privilege recently of interviewing Diana West about her extraordinary new book, American Betrayal, The Secret Assault on Our Nation's Character. You can see it at DailyCaller.com. American Betrayal reads like a spellbinding historical thriller, but it is also a carefully documented account of how the U.S. government was penetrated by communist agents in the years after President Roosevelt normalized relations with the Soviet Union. Diana West shows how a similar assault is being mounted today by yet another collectivist ideology, the supremacist Islamic doctrine of Sharia. She establishes that while the communists and the Islamists may have very different visions of the world, they have employed the same techniques to defeat America. Please watch my conversation with Diana West about American Betrayal, then check out the other great leaders we profile at dailycaller.com.
Annie Soldier Incorporated was started in August 2003 as a simple family effort to help the soldiers in one Army unit, thus the name. However, due to overwhelming requests, on January 1, 2004, the Annie Soldier effort was expanded so it would include any member of any of the armed services in harm's way. Won't you please help? Find out how by going to www.anysoldier.com today.
Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
Welcome back. I'm very pleased to say we're visiting with Yossi Hollander. He is a man who knows a lot about our current energy security or insecurity posture. He is a founder of the Fuel Freedom Foundation, and also of the Our Energy Policy Foundation, a successful entrepreneur and philanthropist with some 40 years of experience in building, among other things, successful software company, and a man that I'm very anxious to talk to for a couple of different reasons about what might be done to contend with the insecurity of our principal energy dependency, namely for our transportation sector. Yossi, welcome. It's good to have you with us, sir.
Thank you for having me.
Let me ask you first, before we get into some of the fixes, for you to talk for a moment about the nature of the problem, Yossi, the extent to which we really are still, despite some of the improvements that have been made of late in terms of fracking and access to both oil and gas in this country, altogether too dependent upon world energy supplies and the possibility they might be interrupted.
I think people sometimes mistake the issue of dependency on oil as an import issue or an export issue. The problem is the price. If oil was $1 a barrel, we wouldn't mind if we imported it from anywhere in the world because it wouldn't fund anything that was operating against us. If oil is at $1.50, and we're importing it, and we're not importing even anything, that means somebody else is still paying that $150 a barrel to those countries that harbor a lot of the problems in the world. So it is actually the problem we have is how to reduce the price of oil, not reduce our import. If we reduce the price of oil to $50-$60 a barrel, then we can defund those elements.
Among them, of course, OPEC, that is very much in the business of setting the price of oil as high, it appears, as they can get away with. But beyond that, Yossi, there is the problem at the moment, as we're seeing with this outfit ISIS in Iraq, possibly threatening Saudi Arabia, turmoil in Libya, in Syria, Nigeria, even Venezuela, that we might see supply affected in a way that would cause the price of oil to go still further. So what is it you are advising we do to change the dynamic and reduce the sort of seeming inexorable rise in the price of oil?
I think we have to create true competition in the market. As long as there's no competition, you mentioned OPEC, they can always set the prices. And we know from other markets, whenever there's competition in the market and people have a choice, then the prices go down. We even have experiments of that working throughout the world, some of them very large, like Brazil. In Brazil, the driver can go to the pump and select what fuel they want to put in. And then the price of gasoline and ethanol in Brazil has been going down for the past 10 years. So the key is to allow us choice at the pump. And we have the resources in the United States. We have a lot of natural gas. We have a lot of garbage. We have corn. We have oil also. But we have a lot of other biomass. We have so many resources that can produce liquid fuel that are cheaper than gasoline by at least $1 a gallon.
And what does it take to produce that liquid fuel from sources other than oil?
It's a very simple technology. The technology is simple. I mean, we are already producing, for example, a fuel called methanol from natural gas. Companies like Celanese and Cosata have been building factories to produce ethanol from natural gas. These are things that are already happening. We know them. It's just that it's not diverted that much to the transportation sector because that sector is highly controlled by regulations and we don't have competition. When you go to the pump, you don't have a choice. You go to the supermarket, you select whatever you want to buy. The government doesn't tell you which cereal you should select and decide for you which one is bad or which one is good. You don't find hundreds of articles and research deciding for you which cereal is good for you or not. You're smart enough to do it yourself. Should have the same with fuels.
And what is the impediment to that kind of fuel choice? Is it a technical, you say that we can produce it easily enough. Is it regulatory? Is it impediments from the auto manufacturers themselves? Wherein lies the problem?
I think there's a few of them. One is the car and the second is the distribution system. And the car itself, we already have some cars that are flex fuel. I think there are now out of the 215 million cars in the U.S., 14 million are flex fuel. That means they can run today on gasoline and ethanol in any combination. We can probably generate small conversion. They can also run on another liquid fuel called methanol, which is very popular in racing. We can. What we need is basically to have most of the fleet like that. And there are some bills that have been on in Congress for a very long time to allow for an open fuel environment like that. But that will still take time, even if they pass, because the rate of change of cars is very slow. And I think cars stay on the road sometimes 20 years. I think what we're promoting the most is the ability to convert your car. We figure that most of the car built in the last 20 years can probably convert it to run on various liquid fuel all in the same tank. Okay, so you can mix them up anytime you want, and that can be done for less than $300 per car if the regulations allowed it.
And the regulations at the moment are not conducive to that. What about the manufacturer's warranties and that sort of thing? Does that have to be addressed as well as regulatory reform?
It would be preferable, but warranty anyway stands for 3 years. So most of the cars on the road are out of warranty as far as the engine is concerned. So, yes, we would love to have a warranty, and I think the car company would be a bit disingenuous if they said that something will happen to the car when the same car is actually running in Mexico or in Brazil with in China running on ethanol and methanol. So it would be disingenuous here to claim that it wouldn't be running here. But no doubt that they could just give the warranty, but even if they didn't, it's only 3 years. So most of the pickup truck, everything that people drive today across America are out of warranty, and they can be converted if it would be legal.
So getting out of the way of fracking on the one hand so as to increase the quantity of these source materials we have for this kind of alternative fuel, and allowing the consumer to convert their cars are clearly key elements of fuel choice. I want to commend one piece of legislation that you alluded to there, Yossi Hollander, and that is the Fuel Choice for Prosperity and Security Act introduced by Eliana Rose-Layton in H.R. 5107. But one other initiative that you have, Yossi, is a new movie that is coming out next month, as I understand it. Tell us a little bit about Pump.
Yes. Pump is a movie about American choice. It's a sad and happy movie at the same time, because it shows how bad our situation is with regard to oil and how it really hurts us in every aspect of our life, our economy, our security, our air pollution, etc. On the other hand, it shows us why we couldn't get through. I mean, that movie, for example, shows you all the history of oil and how various people conspired to prevent us from having alternatives. And what it shows that we have a lot. We're not trying to select an alternative for anybody. We're trying to show people how they can take the choice with their own hand.
Yeah. Fuel choice is the name of the game, it seems to me. I think this is a tremendously important initiative. I look forward to seeing the movie. Yossi Hollander, entrepreneur, philanthropist, and fuel choice advocate, thank you so much for taking some time to join us to advise us as to what is an alternative to our present difficult circumstances with respect to energy security. Keep up the great work and come back to us again soon, if you would, sir. I hope the rest of you will come back to us again tomorrow. Same time, same station. Until then, this is Frank Gaffney. Thanks for listening.
From the nation's capital, you've been listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.